I'm Scott.
I'm Jason.
Welcome to Skipped On Shuffle, a podcast where we delve into an overlooked song by a popular artist.
This episode, we're taking a look at The Punk and the Godfather off of The Who's Quadrophenia. You declared you would be 3 inches taller. You only became what we made you. Thought you were chasing a destiny calling. You only earned what we gave you. You fell and cried. So for this episode, we chose The Punk and the Godfather to highlight an overlooked song by The Who. Some of you might be wondering and saying, hey, I might know that song, but a lot of casual fans don't. It doesn't appear on the greatest hits, and it's also buried in the Quadrophenia album, which is The Who's longest album.
Yeah, it's hard for a casual music listener, you know, to even delve into it because there's a lot going on. It's, you know, it's a really, really long record,
yeah.
And there's a lot of songs on it, and, you know, casual Who fans who are just, like, you know, into it for the catchy rock choruses that The Who is so well known for, they might find it a little too hard to delve into.
Yeah, there's a mix of some instrumentation. There's a few standout tracks that you've, you know, probably heard, like The Real Me and 515.
Yeah.
You know, Love Rain Over Me, which closes the album out. You might have heard some of those, but this one, probably not so much.
Yeah, I think that even in like this is sort of caps off like a trifecta of Who albums. You have Tommy and then Who's Next and then this album. And I feel like Tommy and Who's Next both have a lot of songs that sort of like pervade on radio even today, especially on classic rock stations. But I feel like this album kind of doesn't have that many big, like, major radio hits to it. So, yeah. So, it's easy to see, even though the song may be kind of high on, like, your iTunes charts or whatever, it still, I think it still fits in what we do here at Skipped On Shuffle. No, don't it show. I'm a punk with the stuff
The Who gets started in the early 60s. All the members of the band are playing in other bands in different configurations. Roger Daltrey is the singer, Pete Townsend playing guitar, John Entwistle, bass player, and Keith Moon on drums. Eventually, they all end up getting together and forming The Who and coming out with the My Generation record, which is immediately a hit. You've probably heard the aforementioned My Generation.
Yeah.
Also, I Can't Explain, which yep. sounds very much like a Kinks song.
Yep.
So they had a couple hits right off the bat. You know, their career starts taking off. They go through a couple of more experimental works. A Quick One is their next album, which has the very lengthy A Quick One While He's Away.
Right. Their first attempt at like a longer, you know, taking a pop song and splicing a lot of pop songs together to make like a cohesive story.
Yeah. So the big thing to kind of remember is Pete Townsend's doing most of the writing and is kind of obsessed with this musical opera idea, figuring out a way to make pop rock songs into something bigger,
where each song is part of a cohesive whole, not only as an album as far as like a sonic experience, but as like an actual plot, a story being told.
Yeah, so they move kind of their first steps towards that a little bit with A Quick One While He's Away, and then finally with The Who Sell Out. The album's supposed to be like if you threw on the radio, so it's complete with, you know, advertisements in between songs.
Yep.
Which makes for kind of an interesting listening experience.
It's certainly the most unique Who record, or maybe even one of the most unique rock records, just like the way that it's all set up with these little stupid advertisements and whatever. Yeah. And Keith Moon just being ridiculously hilarious.
And then we get, so their first album is 1965, that's My Generation, and then in 1969 Tommy comes out,
right,
and this album
blows
explodes.
It all out. I mean, it just lets loose on this concept of, it changes the idea of what a rock band can do, essentially, because, you know, before Tommy, yeah, there had been cohesive works that kind of told a story, and there were certainly Broadway musicals, but no one had ever taken like the idea of a hard rock band releasing this artistic statement that, that Tommy actually is.
Yeah, I mean, people point to other albums like Pet Sounds or Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, but those don't necessarily tell a coherent story from beginning to end. Where here we have
a full
central character and you know other side characters, and this character goes on this journey.
Yeah,
an amazing journey. Sorry, that is terrible.
It's cool. You're a dad now. You can make dad jokes.
Yeah, I got the dad jokes. So Tommy's hugely successful. It also kind of transforms the band more as a live act, because now they have to figure out how do we perform our previous hits that people still want to hear, as well as bring this whole
monstrosity
album to the live format. So, I mean, this is where The Who starts kind of pushing at the boundaries of even in how we conceive of rock shows, because they're playing long shows. I mean, you're talking like two-hour shows, which, I mean, for us now, we think, like, you go to a show, obviously the main act is playing for 2 hours.
But right.
Back then, I mean, bands might have played like a 40, 45-minute set.
Yeah,
and that was it.
Originally, The Who would do four shows a day. Like, they would play a club that day, and they would come out, they'd do a 20-minute set, take a break, another 20-minute set, and it would just be it was like a dance hall. It was less like what we think of when we think of a rock show nowadays. And so Tommy kind of forced them to completely abandon that. I mean, they'd already abandoned that mostly by the time they released the album, but they were done with that. Like, they were a headlining act where they would play, you know, a mini set of like, you know, 6 or 7 songs that people would expect them to play from their previous records. Then they'd play the entirety of Tommy from front to back. And then they'd close out with a couple of other songs that would kind of end out the set. So really, this album transformed the band and rock music in general when it came to performing live shows.
So Pete Townsend really wanted to keep kind of working on this idea, going with this idea. He started what's known as the Lifehouse Project, which we're not going to try to describe or get into.
Don't even try.
But I mean, if you do a Google search and kind of read about it, you'll see why we won't even venture into a conversation about what it's about. But basically, it's about music and the communion that people feel when they see live music.
Right.
So one thing that we'll also talk about kind of as we go through today is how Pete Townsend kind of is constantly thinking about how music works and its effect on people, and perceptions of both as, you know, a fan of music and as a performer. So those themes you'll see a little bit in their next album, which I'm sure you've heard of. A huge album, Bob O'Reilly, Won't Get Fooled Again, Behind Blue Eyes, all those songs are on this album. And basically what had happened was Pete Townsend wasn't able to put together this Lifehouse project how he wanted it. So the songs that were kind of left over, he chose the best ones, put them together on this album, and the album ended up even exceeding Tommy.
Yeah, it was huge. I mean, and to this day, it's still huge. I mean, it's one of the it's one of the best selling records of all time. It's just, you know, and you can't turn on a rock radio station without hearing one of the songs from that record eventually in the playlist.
Or turn on a TV.
Or turn on a TV.
Because
every CSI. Every CSI, it uses one of those songs. So yeah, it's just massive, massive record. So then Pete Townsend has to follow it up.
Yep. So he writes Quadrophenia.
The interesting thing about Quadrophenia, as far as the recording of it goes, is that Pete Townsend had, you know, these massive ideas that he wanted to put down on record, and he had already experimented a lot on Who's Next with synthesizers and keyboards and weird noises and stuff. You know, if you think about the beginning of Won't Get Fooled Again, or even the intro to Bob O'Reilly, you know, they have these weird kind of keyboard parts to them that The Who wasn't doing back in the day. And with Quadrophenia, he wanted to continue that, but he also wanted to incorporate more instrumentation like strings and orchestral arrangements and things like that. And it was so big and so massive of a concept that there was no studio that he could do it in comfortably, because Pete Townsend likes to work in the studio. He doesn't like to write a bunch of stuff at home and then come up with all the ideas and then eventually get to a studio with the whole band and start laying down the tracks. He likes to live in the studio and just play with ideas and put things down and then, you know, take them off and just lots and lots of experimentation. And they wanted to do it in their own studio, but they couldn't because they just didn't have a studio that could fulfill everything that he needed. So they ended up using this mobile studio that Ronnie Lane had put together, and who's also a famous musician from the 60s and 70s. And so he had this mobile studio that the Rolling Stones had used and a lot of other bands used while they were on tour. It was an easy way for them to, you know, record an idea or lay down an arrangement, you know, for something while they were on the road. You have to remember, this is the 60s and 70s. It's not like you just could, you know, talk into your phone and record something down. If if you're a band and your musicianship, your songwriters are not classically trained musicians who can write down notation as they come up with it, you have to figure out a way to record your parts on the road. And so this kind of facilitated that for a long time. So
there's basically some RV tractor trailer truck.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. With all this equipment inside, and you could just pull it up to the backstage area. You run inside, you lay down your tracks, and then you run back in and finish the show. So that's where the bulk of Quadrophenia was actually recorded. It was recorded, well, a lot of the tracks were recorded in this mobile studio, but then a lot of it was actually recorded in Pete Townsend's house. Because when I say synthesizers, a lot of people listening may be thinking of, like, you know, a Casio keyboard or, you know, even like a bigger like Korg unit or whatever. But back in the day, synthesizers were massive. They were furniture. Like, they were huge pieces of wood and transistors and switches and stuff like that. So it wasn't something you could just, like, you know, hook up on the road and, like, you know, start playing around with it. So Pete Townsend had them in his home, and he would bring his work home with him. And he was working like 12, 14 hour days to try and pull this all together.
Yeah. And if you listen to Quadrophenia, came out with, I think they called it the director's cut, with all kinds of Townsend demos on there. I mean, you can hear how far he was able to get in just the demo stage of laying down these tracks, where he's, yeah, able to have keyboards, guitar on there, like a little bit of drums and stuff, so that when he finally brings these songs to the band, they're almost in a complete form, which is a little bit different from probably how most bands operate with demos. You know, sometimes you come in with a riff or some kind of idea, but Pete Townsend basically drives this band. It's
absolutely,
it's him figuring out nearly everything
and then bringing it to the group. And obviously, you know, John Entwistle is one of the greatest bass players who ever lived. Keith Moon, one of the greatest drummers who ever lived. Yeah. Roger Daltrey, one of the greatest rock vocalists who's ever lived. Like, obviously he's dealing with top tier talent here who all put their own stamp on things. But, like, the bread and butter of The Who, what makes The Who work, is Pete Townsend. Like, if without him, The Who is nothing. Without him, you've got a wild drummer that the character from The Muppets Animal is based on. You've got John Entwistle, who just wants to noodle and play bass lines all day, like all over the neck. And then you've got Roger Daltrey, this like bloke from the pub, like screaming and yelling or whatever. Like, without Pete Townsend to bring it all together, it just wouldn't have worked. So he is The Who.
So Quadrophenia is a rock opera that's centered around this character of Jimmy, which, as we kind of come to learn more about Jimmy, we can see in many ways as a substitute for Pete Townsend.
Right. Or just Who fans or Who fans in general. Like, it goes back and forth, which we'll get to. But so Tommy had a plot that was very metaphysical. It was weird. It kind of went off in a bunch of different directions, whatever. Quadrophenia's plot is a lot more straightforward. It's much more of like a indie film than it is a major psychedelic journey, you know, whatever. So basically Jimmy is this guy. He's like this punker guy. He's part of this this culture in England at the time called mods, which we won't get into. You can look up the mod culture of England, but he's this mod and he is, you know, not very happy, kind of maladjusted, always feels out of place. Doesn't have a good home life, and he's also addicted to amphetamines. So he's not exactly he's what we would probably describe today as being like a punker or a loser, low life layabout kind of guy. And slacker in the
90s.
There you
parlance.
Go. Yeah, slacker. So he goes to Brighton, this area of England, and sees a show by a band which we believe is The Who, or at least a incarnation of The Who, in this universe that Pete Townsend's created with the album. He goes to see this concert, has a great time, lovely time, is filled with life and filled with joy, goes back home, but still feels like outcasted from even his gang, even his friends. He feels like he doesn't really belong with them. But he's still riding kind of on this high of seeing this concert, but it's not really lasting him. Eventually, he gets super distraught. A bunch of things happen. There's a girl involved. There's romance. You know, all this other stuff goes on. Gets really messed up and becomes suicidal. He crashes his Vespa and thinks about committing suicide.
It's a scooter.
So he's you know, feeling like garbage and decides, you know what? I was so happy when I went to that concert in Brighton. I'm going to go back to Brighton. So he hops on a train and goes to Brighton, and there he's mortified to discover that the leader of his gang, this person that he reveres and also kind of dislikes, but you know, this person that's a major influence in his life in a lot of ways, he finds out that he's a bellboy, you know, a bellhop at a hotel who, you know, a pretty low society.
Taking orders, getting kicked around.
Yeah. And this just blows his mind because he thinks of this person as being this, like, you know, this like almost like God. And he discovers that not only is he not a God, he's actually kind of a loser, you know, and that makes him feel even worse about himself. It makes him feel like he's been following this false idol and following this false dream. So he steals a boat, goes out into the middle of the sea and gets on top of this rock, and he sits there and contemplates his life. And that's where the album ends. So it's this kind of modern or contemporary modern kind of story about youth and about you know, the struggle to fit in, and about rock music and about the culture of rock music at the time, all coalescing into this pretty simplistic plot, but still something that pretty much everybody can somewhat identify with.
And the punk and the Godfather comes fairly early in the story. So this song comes following Jimmy's attempt to go backstage to see the band that he just saw, where he's all invigorated and full of life. And he somehow expects to see this band and for something kind of magical to happen, or they'll kind of give him, you know, some kind of blessing or something. It's not really clear what some kind of affirmation about, yeah. You know, the direction that he thinks he's going to get some kind of direction in his life. So he goes backstage and the band just kind of brushes him aside, ignores him. And even though he's still kind of excited about the show that he just saw, he's kind of like, okay, I'm kind of alone in this and I need to figure out what I'm going to do with myself. And that leads into the following track, which is I'm One.
Right. And it, you know, we're obviously not going to go over I'm One in this particular podcast, but in that song is all about him going over the reasons that he's a loser, going over the reasons why he feels like he's not good enough to be a part of this culture and whatnot. But then, you know, the I'm One comes in where he says, but at least I'm here, I'm present, I'm a part of this, and I'm going to try to do my best.
I'm working on myself.
So that's where this song, The Punk and the Godfather, falls in the plot.
With The Punk and the Godfather, there's a lot of parallels you can draw between the character of Jimmy and Pete Townsend. He kind of had a very messy childhood. There's plenty of stuff you can read about it. He has a pretty lengthy autobiography where he kind of talks about all that. But one consistent thing that comes up a lot in his music is him talking about himself as a performer and also as a listener and being a big fan of music. So when you listen to a lot of Who songs, there's a lot of this meta commentary on music
and rock stardom, the connection that music has with the listener, how a listener can respond to a song, what makes somebody have a favorite song. You know, he's writing at that weird interval between musician and music listener that I feel like a lot of people tend to ignore. Like, they don't really talk about it. And if they do talk about it, they certainly don't talk about it in the songs themselves. It's like the king of meta over here. You know,
that's one of the interesting things. Cause I mean, it might be the same for other bands, but I always think Pete Townsend is the biggest Who fan.
Yeah, 100%.
It is kind of how you need to think of it. So whenever Pete Townsend sits down to write a song, he's like, "What? The Who is my favorite band. What do I want to hear?" And it's kind of a weird approach, but it's one that he consistently takes and consistently delivers great music.
Amazing, amazing material. So if you think of Quadrophenia as the soundtrack to a musical, you know, in a musical, there are a bunch of characters and each character sings their parts and you're listening to the parts that they sing to get an idea of where the plot is going. So, you know, if you've got a character who's a guy and then he's going after this girl, the guy sings his parts, the girl sings her parts, and you realize what's going on. But with the Who, there are only four people in the band and only one major, you know, one person is dedicated to being the lead singer. So sometimes it can get confusing because you don't really know who is singing what. But in The Punk and the Godfather, there are three characters. The first is what we're going to say society, or just the man. It's the overwhelming feeling of responsibility to some sort of societal norm. That's the first character. And anytime the word you is used in the lyrics, that's that character singing to Jimmy. And then Jimmy is the one responding, and he's the one that says I'm. So even though Roger Daltrey is singing both of these verses, the you lines are society and the I'm lines are Jimmy responding to those. And then there's a third character where Pete Townsend comes in and starts singing in the middle of the song, Jason and I have sort of come to the conclusion is almost like an aside, like a Shakespearean aside, like where a character in the play steps out into the front of the stage and directly addresses the audience. So what's happening in the song is the man is trying to push Jimmy down with lines like the beginning of the song. You declared you would be 3 inches taller. You only became what we made you. And then it continues on, you know, now you know that we blame you. Now you know that we framed you. We're the slaves of the phony leaders. Breathe the air. We have blown you. Like basically saying, stay down, dog. You're our slave now, you know? And then Jimmy responds with, I'm the guy in the sky, flying high, flashing eyes. No surprise I told lies. I'm the punk in the gutter. So really, the punk and the Godfather, the punk is Jimmy and the Godfather is what we would to say is like society's influence on the punks.
Yeah. So Jimmy's kind of getting all this feeling about being lowly and in a low place, and that theme is consistent throughout the album. Hence, you know, when we were talking about Bellboy, you know why that's so shocking, because it's Jimmy coming to the realization, if anybody could break out of this, I thought it would be this guy who's constantly rebuffing the society essentially,
right? So So this punk and the Godfather conversation, I guess, if you want to call it that, is going back and forth with the man saying, stay down, dog, and Jimmy saying, listen, there's still some fight left in me.
So during Quadrophenia, it's essentially as Jimmy tries to get backstage and being unsuccessful in, having the relationship or getting to the band. Instead, the band's kind of ignoring him.
Yeah.
And by way of ignoring him, basically telling him this.
Right, exactly.
And probably other people backstage like, hey, what are you doing back here? Get out of here. You don't belong here.
Exactly. So then in the middle of this, Pete Townsend takes over the lyrics, takes over the singing duties, and he steps in and he says, I have to be careful not to preach. I can't pretend that I can teach. And yet I lived your future out by pounding stages like a clown. So basically he's saying, I am Pete Townsend. That's like the line there is basically him saying, like, just so you know, Pete Townsend is singing now. And I'm going to talk about being me and how I pound stages like a clown. You know, I mean,
yeah, if you watch, I think it's in the Kids Are All Right video. Or there's at least some interview out there where Pete Townsend's like, one of my big fears in The Who is, you know, when you watch the early performances, Pete Townsend would get all worked up and smash his guitar. And that became part of the act.
Yeah.
And he had this fear that if he kept doing it, he'd basically just be going through the motions. Because as a fan, you'd be like, I'm going to go see The Who. And I'm really looking forward to the part where Pete Townsend smashes his guitar.
And right. So Pete Townsend has to like run through that motion of smashing the guitar to appease you when maybe he didn't want to smash the guitar that night.
Yeah. So he struggles with this issue of authenticity as, you know, a rock star.
Right.
And I think he's really, I mean, he's talking to the audience, but he's also talking a little bit to Jimmy, who's, when he says, I lived your future out, which is, you know, I'm a little bit older and wiser than you. And I just want to let you know that what you were looking for from this band, you might not get.
Yeah. I'm on the stage. Yeah. You're in the audience. But and as the person on the stage, I can say
it's not all. It's not all you might hope it would be.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So then at the end of this thing, he says, and on the dance floor, broken glass, the bloody faces slowly pass, the numbered seats in empty rows, it all belongs to me, you know. And this is both Pete Townsend as the character of this musician in the story and also Pete Townsend as the real live person is basically saying, it's all on me. Like, this entire thing is me. Like, the Who, the music, the connection to everybody, me being on the stage, like, it's my responsibility and it's a heavy burden to bear.
Yeah. I mean, Pete Townsend, as we mentioned, is the Who. So you figure with each album, you can only imagine the kind of pressure you're under to deliver something that, you know, fans want to hear. So constantly you'll hear these personal issues come up, these kind of apprehensions, this anxiety that's always hanging over him of, you know, am I writing good songs? Do people want to hear these songs? So he's constantly in a conversation with himself about music and about writing music.
Right. So it's kind of difficult to understand if you're just kind of a casual listener of The Who, because when you think of The Who, you think of bravado, you think of loud, big rock and roll with a lead singer who's like belting out, you know, screaming and whatever. And in reality, behind all that is Pete Townsend, who is by his own account, an awkward loser who always feels out of place and always feels like he doesn't belong, even in his own band. You know, he's constantly trying to get some sort of reaffirmation from the audience, from his bandmates, from everything, that he is doing okay. And it's so interesting to know that behind, you know, this whole big show of smashing guitars and crazy drug-fueled craziness, you know, is this scared, quiet little guy who just wants to fit in, you know, like, and it's interesting that he not only channels that into The Who as a, you know, a collectively, but into this specific album where all the whole plot is essentially this kid who just feels like he doesn't fit in anywhere.
I think with this song, and I mean, a lot of the Who songs anyway, despite the fact that Pete Townsend is always talking to himself, I mean, he hits on universal themes that we all feel like at some point we've all felt like an outcast or we're not doing the right thing. You know, feeling upset with, you know, friends, parents. I think despite the fact that Pete Townsend writes so specifically, I mean, his experience is not necessarily a unique or solitary one. We kind of always might feel this way.
We all have a little Pete Townsend in us.
So I think for this song, and I think a lot of the Quadrophenia album as a whole, when you listen to the whole thing from beginning to end, despite the fact of the ambiguous ending of, you know, Jimmy sitting on the rock. I mean, that's essentially, you hope to at least get to that point of being like, okay, I know who I am. I know what my fears are. I know what, you know, I want to be. I know what I don't want to be. What do I do with that now? And I think that's really where we're left at the end of this album. And I think it's kind of a refreshing, rejuvenating experience of listening to this album and kind of hearing the story of Jimmy. I think we're all kind of reminded that we're all on this similar journey filled with self-doubt and people telling us what to do and, you know, feeling oppressed in some way. I mean, that differs for all of us, depending on, you know, where what our backgrounds are, where we're coming from. But I think it is kind of a universal experience. And this album to me is just kind of a friend who sits and listens and shares their story, and you end up connecting with them, which I think is one of the great things about Pete Townsend, is he's able to be so honest. I think honest about, yeah, I'm a musician, I'm a rock star, but it hasn't brought me, you know, any more confidence. And I think going through life, we kind of feel, that way. For me personally, I think a lot of the times you might end up somewhere and you're like, I don't know how I got here. And someone's going to figure out that I don't belong here. And I'm like, it's only a matter of time.
Right. The jig is up.
Yeah. Yeah. That somebody's going to find out, I don't know what I'm doing, and you can't do anything. Yeah. And you're an utter failure.
Yeah.
And I feel like this album kind of taps into a little bit of that anxiety, that we all have about, you know, where we're going and what we're doing.
I, you know, you mentioned the ending of the record, and I know this episode is about The Punk and The Godfather, which is more towards the beginning of the plot, but just to bring the ending up again, you know, Jimmy's on the rock and he's looking out in the distance, and the last song on the record is Love Rain Over Me, which is, you know, this incredibly lush, amazing song, probably easily in my top five Who songs of all time. And it's a call. It's a saying, like, let love come into my heart and let me go off this rock into a better life and a better feeling about myself and the world. And the fact that the album ends, you know, the plot, I guess you should say, ends with Jimmy on the rock and then basically like fade to black. Like, we have no idea. Does he jump off the rock and commit suicide? Does he get back in the boat and go back? Does he join the gang again? Does he go after the girl that he left behind? Like, what happens? I feel like that is the authentic end. Like, yeah, that is how it should end. Like, I feel like if Pete Townsend tried to end it in a way where, like, oh, Jimmy gets off the rock, goes on the boat, and then lives happily ever after, like, that's not the ending. Like, that's not authentic. And I feel like one of the things that I love the most about The Who and about Pete Townsend as a songwriter is how genuinely authentic he really is, and how he always writes direct from the heart and just, like, slams in, like, what he feels, and even if how he feels is makes him look bad, you know. Like, I feel like rock and roll is littered with all these major big rock stars who only want to talk about how great they are, you know, like how great their sexual prowess is, or, you know, how strong they are, or just, like, I don't know, just, you know, Jimi Hendrix, like, chop down the mountain with my hand, you know, like this, like, big, you know, attitude, which is great. You know, like, that's what kind of what rock and roll is all about. But Pete Townsend, like, he figures out a way to make rock a genuine emotional outpouring. And with this album entirety, I love your analogy there to, like, a friend. Like, I put on Quadrophenia and I feel like I'm hanging out with Jimmy, know, and Jimmy's a fuck up, you know, Jimmy's hooked on drugs and, like, you know, a gang member, and he's got problems, but you know what? He's trying to figure out where he fits in everything. And that, to me, there's nothing more genuine than that. There's nothing more genuine than self-reflection and trying to figure out, like, okay, where do I fit in all of this? And to have it all in such a great story and a great rock album is a gift to us. I mean, Quadrophenia is a gift from Pete Townsend to the world.
Yeah. And I think, just kind of, we had gone a little bit back and forth about the differences between this album and Tommy. And I think, yeah, this album's very grounded. Yeah. I think is kind of the best way to describe it in terms of relatability.
Yeah. And just, you can just relate to everything. And bringing it back once again to the Punk and the Godfather, the song, you know, that first notion that Jimmy gets, that first notion that, holy crap, my idols might not be what I think they are. My dreams and goals may not be in line with who I really am. Like, I think that's the turning point, you know, in the plot. Like, the turning point is where he meets the bellboy, and it's completely affirmed that his idols are not what they seem, but this is his first taste. And I think that it's really important to be reminded of that, you know, things are going to come along in your life here and there where it's going to be kind of like you're kind of going to go, you know, you're going to be like, what? Like, how did this happen? How did I get here? Why is this happening? And, you know, Jimmy kind of rejects it and runs off and tries to continue to live his life, even though he had this revelation that his idols are not who they say they are. And then eventually he comes around. But I think that we as people are presented with that kind of thing all the time, the kind of thing that's presented in this song. Yeah. And we need to accept it and think about it and reflect on it and then try to figure out what we're going to do.
Thank you for listening to Skipped on Shuffle, and be sure to follow us online at skippedonshuffle.com.
At skippedonshuffle.com, you can find our blog as well as links to all of our social media pages. And there will also be YouTube videos there of us performing songs that we talk about in these episodes.